I'll fear not what men say, I'll labour night and day to be a pilgrim. It's a line from John Bunyan's book Pilgrim's Progress, and it's a story of a Christian walking through life on the pilgrimage to heaven. It's one of the best-selling books of all time, beating even Harry Potter and The Lord of the Rings. My favourite thing about Bunyan's pilgrimage analogy is it's so perceptive on the Christian life. We don't belong on earth. We are pilgrims passing through. And meditating on this psalm, I wonder if this is where he got the idea from. It's the first psalm in our series on what are called the Psalms of Ascent. These psalms, in the worship book of the Old Testament, were written included for a very specific purpose. Three times a year, the Israelites would take a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the major festivals of the year. Their final destination was the temple, the very dwelling place of God. And because the temple was on a mountain, you were said to be going up to Temple Mount, hence the title, Psalms of Ascent. And these psalms would therefore be used along the road as they journeyed. And Psalm 120, where we start this series, is very much the beginning of the journey. And you see, it does paint a very raw picture, a very desperate picture. So you saw in verse 5, woe to me that I dwell in Meshech. That's a place hundreds of miles away from Jerusalem. It looks desperate, doesn't it? But this isn't a psalm without hope. Just at the beginning, verse 1, I call on the Lord in my distress, and he answers me. This is not a hopeless situation. This is someone who has called on God for deliverance. God has answered, and now the psalmist is waiting for the answer to come. And so as we look at this very raw and honest psalm, I think this has a lot to teach us about how we wait for deliverance in a fallen world. So we're going to think about this psalm under two headings. We'll come back to verse 1 at the end, but firstly, verse 2 to 7. This psalm shows us how to wait by showing us, firstly, being homesick is normal. Being homesick is normal. We've already said that he's a long way, this psalmist is a very long way away from home, where he belongs. Woe to me that I dwell in Meshech, that I live among the tents of Kedar. Hundreds of miles away from Jerusalem, starting the journey. The implication is that when the psalmist will reach Jerusalem, it won't be so bad. There'll be joy. When we get to Psalm 122, you'll see a very different picture, a picture of joy and peace, whereas here there is war. So he says, save me, O Lord. It is not good. But it gets worse than that, doesn't it? Verse 2, save me, O Lord, from lying lips. Now, I think no one in their right mind would want to live somewhere with a reputation for lying. If I went to a second-hand car dealer that I got ripped off from, I probably wouldn't go there again. And most people wouldn't want to work in a place with a reputation for dishonesty. But that is the picture that this psalmist is experiencing all around him. And so it is very desperate. And yet it is worse than that. Verse 6. Too long have I lived among those who hate peace. I am for peace, but when they speak, they are for war. Here the psalmist is trying to mind his own business, but people keep stirring up war. And so it's a dangerous place, hostility all around. And a lot of it, I imagine, directed at the psalmist, the peaceful psalmist. puts all the information together and you get a very bleak picture. Hostility, far away from home. I think it's often true that when we're far away from home, that kind of problems and difficulties are exaggerated. It's much more frightening to be ill abroad than it is to be nearby in your own hometown. So how much worse must it be for this psalmist experiencing all these things far, far away from home? And that is effectively how the psalm ends. You'll notice that there isn't so much resolution in verse 7. As the psalm ends and the curtain closes, we're still far away from home. And so this psalm has a very valuable lesson to us. It's right to be homesick. It's right to be homesick when we're not at God's dwelling place, which for the psalmist then would have been the temple where God was dwelling. But for Christians today, that's the new creation where God will dwell, where Christians can enjoy living with God forever. I really want to think how this applies to us. But before we get to that, there is a barrier I think we need to jump over. So someone might say, well, this situation is very different from the experience of Christians today, this violent situation. Can we relate to that? Well, we may not be experiencing the same kind of persecution today, but it is true that Christians in all ages experience persecution. It's just that it comes in different degrees and in different forms over the courses of our lives. So we may not be able to see violence all around us, but the low-level kind of persecution, perhaps the snide remark or social exclusion, is something that we may well have experienced and something that is very familiar for Christians today. And that low-level persecution that is experienced in our country today can be very dangerous to Christians. And so I think this psalm is a really helpful tonic, because this is a psalmist who shows us it's right to feel homesick. I guess that we could feel other ways about it. We could either withdraw from where we experience persecution or just run away, or we could conform, which I think is what drives many people to give up the Christian faith, because they feel it's too difficult being distinctive. But this psalm says, yes, it's right. It's right to feel homesick. And it's right to cry out to God. While surrounded by liars, this person, this psalmist, refuses to conform. So let me briefly take us through what this has to teach us. Let's see how persistently distinctive this person is. When other people for war, he's for peace. It's the right thing to be distinctive when part of God's people. It's right to be the Christian that sticks out among non-Christian friends and colleagues and family. It's right to be that way, because this psalmist knows that he belongs in Jerusalem. He belongs where God is dwelling. It is right to be distinctive. We've mentioned his homesickness. I think that is what is really driving this distinctiveness. He has got something better to be living for, the dwelling place of God. And so we should expect to feel homesick. I mentioned the family connection I have with Kemsing. And as a young boy, I used to go and visit here, often to see my grandmother. And as I came here, I had a really fun time, and we'd go walking up in the hills. And I sometimes would wonder, what must it be like to live in Kemsing? It seemed like a really, really great place. But this psalm tells us, where we live now, whether it be Kemsing or or wherever, is not our real home. Feeling homesick is a good thing. Realising that Kensing or wherever is not our home is a helpful lesson for us because it helps us. It helps us focus on the things that are eternal, the things where we really belong. The growth of the gospel, our own relationship with God, the growth of the spiritual growth of our own church family here. It's right for us to long for the next day. I think this is a really relevant passage for those of us who might be grieving and suffering at this time. It's right to be frustrated in the world when suffering happens. The world is not meant to be the way it is now. God has a plan to put the world right one day, and he invites us to be a part of that and to join that plan by believing in the Lord Jesus. And so we can look at this psalm and say, yes, it's right to long for deliverance, and it's right to make this psalm our own and to pray to God. So we've seen it's right to be homesick. This psalm helps us in a second way, as it teaches us how to wait. And that brings us to our second heading. We can be confident that deliverance is sure. We can be confident that deliverance is sure. Look down with me at verse 1. I call on the Lord in my distress, and he answers me. This psalm is not a hopeless psalm. This is a psalm of someone who has already called on God. God has answered his prayer, and he's now waiting for the response to come. It's the spiritual equivalent of calling 999. Your call has been received, the emergency service is on your way, and you're now waiting, certain that soon the rescue will come. And yet we've pointed out already that this psalm doesn't end with full resolution. Verse 7, the curtain closes, the last line, they are for war. Doesn't that hit you? The last word of the psalm, war. No resolution. And so this psalm teaches us a lot about how we wait, particularly about confidence, being confident as we're waiting. Because this psalmist is not someone who has given up. Verse 1, God has answered me. God has answered my prayer. Verse 7, I'm still in it. I'm still waiting. If we're wondering why this psalmist can be sure of deliverance, perhaps a little context in the book of Psalms might be useful. So you may have noticed, if you ever read the Psalms the whole way through, which I hope you do, you'll notice that every now and then you get these little headings that say Book 1, Book 2, Book 3. It's sort of like the big section markers for the book of Psalms as a whole compilation. And this psalm falls in book number 5. You'll ask, how is that significant? Well, one of the big themes in book number 5 of the Psalms is the steadfast love of the Lord for his people. So if you turn back a few pages, back to page 610, there it is, book V, Psalm 107, on page 610. Verse 1, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, his love endures forever. And that very much sets the tone for the group of psalms that we're currently in. So this psalmist knows this. This psalmist knows that he's praying to the God who loves his people and who has committed and promised to look after his people and put them in the land of Israel. Deliverance is sure. And it's for that reason, if you turn back to page 622, it's that reason he can say verse 4, which I think seems very unusual when we read it for the first time. What will he do to you? And what more besides you, deceitful tongue? What will he do? What will God do to the lying to the liars that aren't part of God's people? He will punish you with a warrior's sharp arrows. with burning coals of the broom bush. This psalmist knows that judgment and justice will be done. And that's a good thing. He won't have to suffer forever. One day, justice will come. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing for the unrighteous to be brought to justice. I call on the Lord in my distress, and he answers me. So we've seen the solid foundation of the psalmist's hope. God is a God of steadfast love. What does it mean for us? Well, God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Just as the psalmist was sure that God could deliver him, we can have that sure deliverance. We can have that same hope that the psalmist had. It's worth putting in a caveat, of course, as we've said. In the Old Testament, they would have looked forward to God's promises all about Israel, the land, the temple, all the physical things in the Middle East that God has promised. Now, in the New Testament, we can look forward to the final dwelling place of God, back on the last page of the Bible, Revelation 21. God is going to put all things new with a new heaven and a new earth. We can be just as confident of deliverance, even though we're waiting for something different. However, as I've thought about this, I think there are some differences between us and the psalmist, which actually mean that we can be more confident than he was, which I think is quite a strong statement to make. More confident than this person, suffering in such a strong way, and yet sure of deliverance. Two reasons. One, we have more sureness about God's answer, because we live this side of the cross. God has shown his love to us by dying on the cross, by taking the punishment for sin. The love of God is certain, even more than he would have experienced. And secondly, we have a partial fulfillment of what he was looking for. He was looking forward to getting to Jerusalem, dwelling with God. And we have that partial fulfillment, because God, in Jesus, as the church, we are part of God's temple. It's one of the pictures for the New Testament of the church. So the Apostle Paul can say things like in the book of Ephesians, you in Jesus, you are being built together into a dwelling place by God, for God, by the Spirit. We have that already, and so we can be more confident, having experienced a bit already of what the psalmist was looking for. We're not at the final destination yet, but we can have confidence in waiting. So, we've asked Psalm 120, how do we wait for deliverance in a fallen world? The psalmist has told us, remember, deliverance is certain. And in the meantime, being homesick for that new creation where God is, that is a right thing. So as we close, let me share someone who grasped both those ideas really well. His name was John Patton, and in 1858, he went out to the South Pacific to bring the gospel to the locals there. And his peers told him it would be completely dangerous. You'll be eaten by cannibals. He admitted that there were days that his heart wavered, but he took heart from the power of the gospel. When a group of natives surrounded him on those South Pacific islands, here's what he said. I assured them that I was not afraid to die, for at death my Saviour would take me to be with himself in heaven, and be far happier than I have ever been on earth. I then lifted up my hands and eyes to the heavens and prayed aloud to Jesus, either to protect me or to take me home to glory, as he saw to be for the best.